It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
I'm John Cruz. Welcome to the show. Our thoughts and prayers are going out to our fellow Americans in East Texas today who are struggling in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. I know if you're like me, you want to help. And I can tell you the best way to do so is to donate cash. And the best way to do that right now, as we're in disaster relief mode, is by donating to the American Red Cross. They have volunteers on the ground. And more are on the way to help the hundreds of thousands of our fellow Americans affected by this catastrophe. I work with the Red Cross in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina and can tell you from experience, this organization knows what to do to help and can bring resources to bear like no other. So, how can you help support the Red Cross and in doing so, support the victims of this catastrophe? It's easy to make a donation in any amount. Heck, I just did it myself, and I'll tell you how you can do it too. Just go to redcross.org. That's redcross.org. There's a donation portal right there on the front page specifically for the victims of Hurricane Harvey. The website again, redcross.org. This week on the show, I know some of you start off your morning reading the newspaper. As for me, I start off my morning reading the Outdoor Wire. It's a digital newspaper delivered every weekday to my mailbox, covering just about everything you'd want to know about in the outdoors industry. The founder and editor of the Outdoor Wire is Jim Shepherd, and he'll be joining us from his home in Tennessee in just a couple of minutes to tell you more about this free service you can enjoy too. You may recall we talked to Oregon-based outdoors writer Troy Rodakowski last week about the sheep hunt he and his dad just got back from in the Yukon Territory. What we didn't talk about, though, was Troy's grizzly bear hunt there. Well, this week, we're going to do just that. Did Troy bag a big grizz? We'll let you know later in the broadcast. There was a fish farm fail in Washington's Puget Sound a couple weeks ago that released some 180,000 Atlantic salmon into the salt water outside of their pens. Ron Warren, the fish program director for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, is going to come on the air so we can figure out exactly what this means to the native salmon and steelhead of Washington State and what kind of dangers these farm fish pose for our native fisheries. We've also got some outdoors news to share about those high-strung PETA activists whose latest Facebook campaign went viral in a way they didn't expect, about what the National Monument Review, completed by the Department of the Interior, says, and more importantly, doesn't say, and we'll share a story about a hawk who hitched a ride out of town to get out of the path of Hurricane Harvey. We'll wind things up chatting with David DeBeaupre, the owner of the Sierra Trout Magnet Fly Shop in Bishop, California. He's going to tell you about the great opportunities for trout you'll find this month near the mountainous border of California and Nevada. First things first, though, let's pour ourselves a cup of joe and catch up with some outdoors-related news. Next on America Outdoors Radio, we're going to tell you about, well, one of the favorite things I do every morning. A lot of you may read the newspaper. A lot of you may turn on the TV to catch the morning news. But as for me, I log on to the World Wide Web and I open up my daily edition of the Outdoor Wire. What is it? Well, the man who publishes it is going to tell you. His name is Jim Shepherd. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, Jim, I love the Outdoor Wire, have been a subscriber, and by the way, folks, it's absolutely free to subscribe to the Outdoor Wire for a long time. Why don't you tell our listeners what they're going to find every day?
Well, we like to think of the Outdoor Wire as kind of being a mix of the Wall Street Journal, Investor's Business Daily, and maybe a little variety magazine thrown in just for a little snark and fun once in a while. We try to cover pretty much the waterfront of what's going on in the outdoors from an industry side, but also from a consumer standpoint. But we started out primarily as a consumer and a reporter resource. So we kind of take that hard lead on what's going on every day. For example, the report from Secretary Zinke just came out on the national monuments, and I won't spoil it for anybody by saying what's in it because I'm not really quite sure. I've read it, but I'm not quite sure what he's saying. But, you know, that's going to be a big focus for things we do. But we have fun stuff, too. We spent, the week of the eclipse looking at the eclipse and sharing pictures and observations from our readers and stuff from around the country. So, we cover a lot of different areas.
Well, you sure do. As a matter of fact, just looking in a recent edition, there are sections dedicated to conservation, to events, to retail, to competition, acquisitions, hunting, fishing, jobs, products, states, youth, media, and more and more and more. But what I really like on top of all that, on top of all the news that you have, is you have a feature every day, and a lot of times it's authored by you, but several times it's not, and you really go into depth on one particular subject. How do you pick and choose? Is it just whatever ruffles your feathers that day, or what's your topic of the day?
I don't always get my feathers ruffled. Sometimes I laugh at stuff, but I have a pretty healthy sense of humor after 40 years in the news business. But it can be whatever, we call it the soup du jour. It's whatever is going on in the day. This week, this past week, we spent a lot of time with the eclipse because that's what everybody was interested in. And it could be anything from federal fisheries regulations to, the red snapper and the Gulf controversy to bear's ears to, things you can do with a Swiss Army knife. You never know what we're going to be doing because we try to put something in there for everybody every day. And we can be either topical, kind of off the cuff, or just do something for fun.
When it comes to the outdoors, what do you like doing? And I know that, competition shooting is one thing.
Well, I really love a lot of the outdoors and don't have a chance to do it. That's the dirty secret for all of you out there looking to get into the outdoor business. You get into the business, you don't get to do it anymore. I love to fish. Saltwater and fly fishing I especially love. I love fishing, trout fishing, and especially the White River in Arkansas is one of my favorite places to get away to. I dearly love competition shooting, three gun and the Yankee Cup and that sort of competitions I really love. One day they're going to create a super senior category for me and maybe I'll beat somebody. I love really pretty much all of the outdoors. I like hiking and camping and hunting some. I love wing shooting. I don't do a whole lot of hunting because my family doesn't eat a lot of it. And I have the feeling that there are other people who need it. And I'm not going to go out there and just shoot for recreation. I don't shoot critters just for fun. If I'm not going to eat them, I'm not going to shoot them.
That's more than fair, and I think every ethical hunter is eating what he's shooting, so agree with you 100% on that. We've got to go, but before we do, quite a few other outdoor wires, or I should say wires, that you're involved with. Why don't you name off a few of them?
Okay, well, let me see if I can do this quick. We'll do this quickly, see if I can get it done. We have the archery wire. We have the birding wire. We have the shooting wire, which deals with everything that's non-hunting and kind of competition-related. We have a tactical wire, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's for law enforcement, military, police, and trainers. We have a dealer wire that is not a wide circulation. That's for FFL dealers, and they get word about programs and sales and all those sorts of things in that. And then, of course, the mothership is the outdoor wire. And launching in just a few weeks, we're going to be doing a new service called the air gun wire, and it is dealing with all of the non-powder propellant shooting opportunities that are out there because we're seeing a lot of interest in air gunning from Olympic competition to big boar hunting. I mean, the last deer I took with a 50 caliber air rifle.
Well, there you go, folks. Breaking news. You heard it here first. The air gun wire.
Right there. I haven't even told my people yet. So.
All right. Well, look for the air gun wire coming up really soon. And you can subscribe right now to the tactical wire, the birding wire, the fishing wire, the shooting wire, the archery wire, and, of course, the outdoor wire at theoutdoorwire.com. Jim, thanks for the service you provide for all of us. And thanks for spending some time with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
We'll be right back. Are you ready for your Best of the West affordable summer vacation? Hello, I'm Mark Hemstreet, owner of Shiloh Ann's. Many of the big hotel chains will have hidden extra fees for things like parking, internet, so-called resort fees, and lots more. The list is as long as it is sneaky. But at Shiloh Inns and Suites Hotels, there are no hidden fees. Shiloh amenities are all free, like Shiloh's spacious pools and spas, steam and sauna rooms, fully equipped fitness centers, and even the kids stay free. And don't forget that Shiloh Inns also provide a free continental or full hot delicious breakfast at most Shiloh Inns. Now that's affordable excellence. For reservations, call 1-800-222-2244 or visit our website at shilohinns.com. Smoke-free and dog-friendly Shiloh Inns, American family-owned and proud of it.
Looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer an affordable platform to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting host John Cruz through his website at AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com. But hurry, if you wait too long, this big opportunity might just get away. That's AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com.
It's time America honored its police again. I'm Wayne LaPierre with the NRA. Help us back our blue by donating your vehicles to NRA Cars for Freedom, and we'll come pick them up. Donations are tax deductible, and we'll support the NRA Foundation's law enforcement training to active and retired police officers. Help us back our blue. Visit NRACarsForFreedom.com or call 1-866-NRA-GIFT today.
Talking to Troy Rodakowski again. He's the outdoors writer and big game hunter from Oregon. We talked to him not too long ago on America Outdoors Radio about a sheep hunt he and his dad enjoyed up in the Yukon Territory. But we didn't tell you about the grizzly bear hunt that Troy had up there too. Troy, welcome back to the show.
Hey, I'm glad to be back. Thanks for having me on again, John.
So Troy, you were hunting grizzlies up in the Yukon. How did it go?
You know, I ended up and I did not bag a grizzly, but we saw a lot of grizzly bears, you know, and we only had about 2 or 3 days to devote to grizzly hunting because we were concentrating on sheep. But we did see a lot and got some great photos and had some great experiences with bears. So in my opinion, it was a successful hunt.
Well, that's the spirit there, Troy. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
So let's break this down a little bit. You were with Woodrig Outfitters. I know that you gave them a double thumbs up the last time we talked because they gave you a great sheep hunting experience. But where you were hunting sheep was not the same place where you were hunting grizzly bears. Now, you were on horseback. You were going to some really remote mountainous locations to find the sheep. Where were you situated when it came to looking for the grizzly bears?
We were down lower in the valleys. You know, there's some pine trees down in there and some river drainage bottoms where these bears like to hang out during the summer months and early fall. And they're down in those areas feeding on various things and roaming about. And so we spent a lot of time glassing for bears and riding the horses and spotting bears and getting off and looking them over. And that's how we were hunting them.
And this was all, what, about 200 miles from Whitehorse, float plane to get in?
Right, about 200 miles north of Whitehorse, so we took the float plane in there, and then, you know, all the hunting from there is on horseback out of spike camps. So, you know, it's pretty rugged. It's pretty nice, though. I mean, you can drink right out of the creeks. Probably one of the only places in the world that you don't have to worry about filtering the water. It's clean, clear, glacial-fed water, and it's pretty remote.
So you said you saw some grizzly bears. How come you weren't able to, you know, consummate the deal and bag one?
Well, the thing is the Department of Fish and Wildlife up there, and they say in about a 4,000 square mile radius, there's only 200 grizzly bears. That's what their estimate is on the bear population up there. They don't like you shooting sows, because if you do shoot a sow, then the tag numbers go down. So my goal was to shoot a mature boar. Of course, we saw a lot of sows. We saw a lot of sows with cubs, and we saw a lot of young boars. So We did have some close encounters with bears. Unfortunately, not a mature boar that I could put my sights on. But, you know, just watching these bears and interacting and watching how they move about up there in the Yukon and what they're feeding on and places they like to inhabit, that was a fun time for us.
You know what, Troy, I want to commend you on this. And folks, I know not everybody listening to the show today is a big game hunter, but I want to remind you about the tagline for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Their tagline is "Hunting is conservation." And I think Troy, in describing his hunt and why he didn't pull the trigger on a guided hunt where he spent thousands of dollars, really sums up that ethic. Could he have shot a bear? Yeah. Would that bear have impacted conservation efforts of these bears in the Yukon? Yes, it would have, and that's why he didn't pull the trigger. That's why hunting is so important, and hunters' ethics are so important, too. Troy, you're really to be commended for the decision not to pull the trigger when you could have. You didn't pull it, and you didn't do it for the right reasons.
Right. Thanks, John. That's important. It's also important to the outfitter. And, you know, I understand that they have management policies up there. And even though the tag says you can fill it with a certain bear, I think it's important to remain vigilant of what the right thing to do in the right situation is. And I felt that, you know, the conservation and strategy of the grizzly bear in that particular area, it was important not to take a bear in that case. So I didn't.
And what did the guide say about that?
They were really happy, actually. They, you know, it's funny. They said, well, you could shoot a sow if you want. And I said, well, no, not, I really don't want to, especially if it's going to hurt the numbers. And, you know, I felt pretty good about making that decision. We were up there to enjoy the area and have a great trip and enjoy the wildlife, and that's what we were doing. And in my opinion, getting a bear and bringing a bear home, it was a bonus. We didn't need that bonus. We already had a sheep, and we had a great trip, so that was, you know, that's what we were there for.
Well, I'm going to ask a favor. I'm going to ask that you post a photo of at least a bear that you saw up on that trip on our Facebook page at America Outdoors Radio, because I want to share that with our listeners today.
You bet. I'll definitely put one on there as soon as we finish up this interview.
All right. One more time with the outfitter you went with and the enthusiastic thumbs up that you gave them, so folks know that they ought to book them too.
Absolutely. I highly recommend them. It's Widrig Outfitters, WIDRIG, just like it sounds, outfitters.com. Look them up. If you're interested in hunting the Yukon and having a great trip, particularly a horseback trip, I highly recommend them. And there's really nobody else up there that does what they do. So go for it.
All right. That's Troy Rodakowski, folks. He's the outdoors writer from Oregon and big game hunter. And you just learned a lesson here. Sometimes you can have a good hunt even when you don't pull the trigger. Troy, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
You bet, John. Thanks for having me.
And now,
it's time for the Trail of Shame.
Shame, shame on you. Shame, shame on you.
Stories of poachers, scoundrels, and other ne'er-do-wells. So if you see someone committing a criminal act on the water or in the field, turn them in. It's the right thing to do.
This week, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, also known as PETA, are walking our trail of shame after they launched a Facebook campaign where supporters could frame their profile picture with the phrase, "Shoot selfies, not animals," with a nice buck logo as well as the PETA logo at the bottom of the profile picture frame. This anti-hunting group was hoping the profile frame would go viral, and it did, just not in the way they hoped it would. Nope, hunters hijacked this campaign and started posting profile pics of themselves with trophy bucks, bulls, Bruins, and more all over Facebook. Anglers got in the act too, posting photos of some very nice fish in the process. As a matter of fact, PETA itself acknowledges 250,000 people have used the frame, making it the most popular one on Facebook right now. As for the hundreds of thousands of hunters and anglers who are using the PETA profile pic as a tongue-in-cheek jab at the organization that hates what we do, well, PETA refers to us hunters and anglers as trolls. And one early poster of this profile picture frame from PETA, well-known outdoor chef and personality Jeremiah Doty, actually received over 200 death threats from PETA supporters. That, of course, was before several hundred thousand other hunters and anglers jumped on the bandwagon with them. Hard to be a hater when you've got to send that much hate mail. So, if any of you PETA activists are listening, I hate to break the news to you, but your epic fail of a Facebook campaign and the childish and threatening way you've responded have earned you a walk this week on our trail of shame.
Fame, shame on you.
Stick around, there's a whole lot more of the outdoors coming your way, to include a trip to the Northwest where we learn about a fish farm failure and what anglers are doing to fix it. We've got a great wildlife story flying your way from Hurricane Harvey. We'll let you know what's going on with those national monuments, and we're going to talk about fishing the Sierra Nevadas this fall. It's all coming your way on America Outdoors Radio.
Looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer an affordable platform to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting host John Cruz through his website at AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com. But hurry, if you wait too long, this big opportunity might just get away. That's AmericanOutdoorsRadio.com.
You're back with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. For our next segment, we're taking you towards the Emerald City of Seattle, because not far away from there, in Puget Sound, there is a problem. Thousands of Atlantic salmon that have been raised by a private firm with a fish farm near Cypress Island have escaped after the barrier systems on the farm have failed. There's currently an open season for these escaped Atlantic salmon, which are being caught not only around Cypress Island, but also on the west side of Whidbey Island to the south, and one was even caught by a pier angler 60 miles south of the escape site. With us here to tell you more about this situation and what problems this may cause the local fisheries in the area is Ron Warren, the assistant director of the fish program at the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Ron, thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having us, John. Appreciate it.
So, Ron, how many fish have escaped? I understand there was 305,000 of these 10-pound Atlantic salmon in the fish pens. How many actually got out? The initial estimate was 4,000 to 5,000. I know that was way, way low.
Yeah, John, thanks. The original estimate, 4,000 to 5,000, we aren't going to know exactly what has escaped until the inventory on what remains in the pens, both live and dead, is conducted. We hope to have that done here in the next few days by Cook Aquaculture. So I don't have any additional information. The only thing Cook is telling us as they make those estimates is it's significantly more. If they haven't had the ability, because of safety issues, to get on the pens or to dive the pens and repair any tears, I'm going to guess that most of those fish are finding their way out because they haven't been fed for a week now. And they're probably going to start trying to look for some salvage of food and survival. So I'm going to guess they're losing fish on a regular basis as time has gone on.
All right, so just for the sake of argument, we're going to say well north of 100, maybe 200,000 fish, and I'm not holding you to that number. I'm just saying there's a lot of fish out there. There's been a lot of concerns published in newspapers like the Seattle Times and online, and I just wanted to walk through some of those and see if they really are valid concerns. The first one that comes to mind is crossbreeding. Do we have to worry about these Atlantic salmon, which are not native to the Northwest, breeding with our Chinook, our Coho, our Pinks, or our Chum salmon here in the Northwest?
Short answer is no, John. We have no documented proof of that ever occurring. I'm not much of a risk taker that way, so I don't want to continue to test that theory, but the short answer is no, that there's no successful crossbreeding. We actually can say that from an Atlantic to an Atlantic, we've had no successful establishment of any Atlantic spawning successfully in Western Washington waters. So even an Atlantic to an Atlantic, they're not very successful in establishing themselves here.
And that was my second question. There's been concerns that these Atlantic salmon will go into the streams in Puget Sound and try to spawn, and that's going to cause competition among the native fish that are trying to spawn there and result in decreased numbers of spawning native fish. Is this a valid argument or not so much?
Yeah, I don't believe it is. My fear is that if the Atlantic salmon that are out there right now begin to forage on other smaller fish that our listed species, our Chinook and Steelhead and Puget Sound, are eating, that's where I'm going to be most concerned. And our endangered species don't need that additional competition. They also don't need any interference relative to these Atlantics as they enter freshwater, and we know that they likely will enter freshwater and try to spawn. So we don't need the interference with those fish in that environment either.
All right. So when it comes to competition in the ocean, we're talking about these Atlantic salmon trying to eat the candlefish, the squid, the same forage base that our Chinook salmon and other salmon found in Puget Sound are trying to eat as well.
That's my fear, yeah. And so far, the initial responses that we've gotten when we've got our hands on some of those fish, some of the co-managers have reported back that as they're catching them, they're looking for stomach contents, and stomachs are empty right now, so they haven't started foraging on anything else. We don't think they will, but we also don't want them to. So that's been our main focus, is to remind people that we have a ongoing regulation that allows that if you catch an Atlantic, you can keep it as long as the other Pacific Ocean salmon fisheries are open. That's an ongoing regulation that we have on the books. And so when we announce, go get them, guys and gals, that's just our reminder that that regulation is out there.
All right. I'm glad you mentioned that. Last, and perhaps the most valid concern out there, disease transmission. I've seen pictures of some of these Atlantic salmon that have been caught. They clearly have suffered from diseases they have caught in this fish pen, fish farm environment. Can those diseases be transmitted to native fish, native salmon that are swimming around Puget Sound?
Yeah, and diseases are funny. I mean, these are odd-looking fish. A lot of the photos we're seeing have eroded fins, odd jaw lines and open mouths, and most of that is the environment in which they live in, plus the domestication the stock has undergone because of its intensive rearing. The disease history on these fish is their last antibiotic treatment was July of 2016, and they were scheduled to be harvested next Monday. So a very healthy lot of fish from a rearing perspective, and should be considered a good fish to eat. They would have been on our markets to buy them in grocery stores and in other locations next week.
All right, one last question. This one's kind of an oddball question. You know, I'm hearing that we don't have to worry about crossbreeding, that you do have some concerns about competition on the spawning grounds and in the salt water, and that disease is not an issue. If all this is true, though, why aren't we producing Atlantic salmon in our hatcheries instead of native salmon that compete with the wild stocks? Why don't we just produce Atlantic salmon, release them? And I've got some ideas on what the answer might be, but I'd love to hear your answer.
Well, my answer is we've tried that and we weren't very good at it. Back when I first started with the agency in the late 70s and early 80s, we actually raised and released Atlantic salmon to try to come back to one of our experimental facilities, and they were just fraught with diseases, and didn't adapt to Pacific Ocean conditions very well. We never had one of those fish return as an adult when we did release it. And so instead of doing that, as we evolve through time, once we have endangered species, we shouldn't be introducing other species into our system. We should be concerned with what we've got and maintaining that for future generations.
All right. Before we go, is there anything else you want to add for our listeners regarding this whole Atlantic salmon kerfuffle, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I would just say that there's been a lot of interest. That's very promising. The folks in the Pacific Northwest and fishing, they love the outdoors. I love their enthusiasm and their passion for this issue. I'm glad to see all of the recreational folks adapting to how to catch Atlantic salmon, seeing a lot of pictures on blog sites and getting a lot of phone calls. It's very exciting from a perspective of getting to see people harvest fish, and we're doing our best to A, get this cleaned up, and B, make sure it never happens again.
All right, that's Ron Warren. He's the Assistant Director of the Fish Program at the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, commenting on the release of hundreds of thousands of Atlantic salmon from a fish farm in Puget Sound. If you do catch some of these Atlantic salmon, folks, make sure you report your results online through the WDFW website. They do want to track what's going on here, and make sure you check that website for further updates. But until then, go catch them while you can if you live in the Sound. Ron, thanks for sharing this with us on America Outdoors Radio.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands. We've helped ban the use of drones for hunting. We help repair wildlife corridors and key riparian areas. We speak up against illegal ATV use. We collaborate with elected leaders to keep public lands in public hands. We're Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, with membership in all 50 states in Canada. Please join this dynamic conservation group. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
There's no more majestic, magical, adventuresome country than the Western United States of America to enjoy a great family vacation. Hello, I'm Mark Hemstreet, owner of Shiloh Inns. Shiloh Inns are still offering affordable four-star accommodations at two-star prices. Enjoy deluxe smoke-free suites, spacious pools and spas, and fully equipped fitness centers. From free high-speed internet in every room to a free continental breakfast or full hot, delicious breakfast at most Shiloh Inns. There are no hidden fees like some of the big chain hotels charge. Even the kids stay free, and Shiloh Inns are dog-friendly. For reservations, call 1-800-222-2244 or visit our website at shilohinns.com. Shiloh Inns, affordable excellence. American family-owned and proud of it.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Hurry, though. If you wait too long, the big opportunity might just get away. AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi. I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
Well, before I left my campsite, I was putting out my fire, and out of nowhere, Smokey Bear showed up and hugged me?
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. He likes it when people correctly put out their campfires. He's pretty big on wildfire prevention. He's just letting you know you did good with a hug. He's a hugger.
I just got a bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update!
All right, I'm gonna let you go now. I've got a lot of ranger stuff to do. There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
Hi, I'm Brandon Bates. You know, we hunters appreciate the animals that we pursue in a way that non-hunters will just never understand. We also protect their habitat. That's why the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation alone has conserved more than 5.5 million acres of prime elk country and torn down over 600,000 acres of no trespassing signs. But we're losing vital habitat every day and we need your help. If you haven't gotten on board yet, you ought to. Call 1-800-CALL-ELK or visit elkfoundation.org.
You're back with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got some outdoors news for you, and we'll start off with a Hurricane Harvey story from the New York Post. We learn a hawk, a Cooper hawk to be exact, spooked by Hurricane Harvey, rode out the storm inside a taxi. Taxi driver William Brousseau, a 45-year-old resident of Missouri City, Texas, was stunned to find the Cooper's hawk cowering inside his cab after it flew in through an open window when the storm hit. The bird of prey, terrified by the low pressure and high winds, allowed Brousseau to offer it a perch on one of his hands, which he had gloved beforehand. Brousseau named the bird Sergeant Hurricane Harvey. He left a window open in case the bird wanted to fly off again, but the bird decided to stay. A representative from the Texas Wildlife Rehab Coalition of Houston dropped by on Saturday and picked up Harvey. Brousseau told the Post that it was a very cool experience and he felt honored that the hawk chose to hunker down with him. Brousseau also said the hawk was very well behaved. Better behaved, as a matter of fact, than his own cousins, who he says come here and wreak havoc. Our next story is about that National Monument Review we've told you about, ordered by President Trump. As promised, Ryan Zinke, the Secretary for the Department of the Interior, has completed a review of 27 national monuments and has sent his recommendations to the White House as to whether or not they should remain as is or have changes made to some of them or perhaps even have their designation stripped. We do know that 6 national monuments will keep their current status unchanged because they were removed from the review list prior to the final report being sent in. These national monuments include Craters of the Moon in Idaho, Hanford Reach in Washington, the Upper Missouri River Breaks in Montana, Grand Canyon Parashant in Arizona, Canyons of the Ancients in Colorado, and the Sand to Snow National Monument in California. What we don't know is what recommendations Secretary Zinke made to President Trump about the remaining 21 land and sea-based national monuments. The executive summary released by the Department of the Interior last week doesn't say what they are, and when I reached out to the press secretary at the Department of the Interior about this, I was told the White House would be releasing that information, and the agency that put it together, the Department of the Interior, would not. Strange. Very strange indeed, but true. We'll tell you more about this public lands issue as news becomes available. Next on America Outdoors Radio, we're taking you towards the Sierra Nevadas. That's right, the border of Eastern California and Nevada, where there's some great mountains and some great trout fishing. One place you've got to stop while you're in that area is in Bishop, California, because the Sierra Trout Magnet Fly Shop is there, and we've got the owner with us today. His name is David DeBeaupre. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, David, as we roll into September, I know the trout are going to be getting hungry. Let's talk about 3 fisheries that you focus on, and one of them is a lake fishery, Crowley Lake. Tell our listeners about that lake and the fishing folks will find there in September.
You know, everybody loves to fish rivers, but the beauty of Crowley Lake is in September, we have 3 different species of trout that come around, the Lahontan cutthroat, which grows to be very big, the rainbow trout, and then the brown trout. So those 3 are swimming around where the inlets come into the lake, and that's what we're catching. And since it's a lake, we're looking for the big fish. Any strike you miss in Crowley Lake at that time of year could be the trout of the lifetime that you miss.
And I love those 3 species. I mean, rainbows are the bread and butter for trout anglers all over the U.S. Brown trout, very wily, can get very big. But Lahontan cutthroat trout, they're confined basically to the west, especially Nevada, the Sierras, up into the northwest a few lakes. I love fishing for these Lahontans in the fall. They really get on the bite, and their colors are just beautiful, too, aren't they?
They're gorgeous trout, yeah. They get big. They get a big, mean-looking head on them. huge, huge pink stripe. They're as beautiful as any trout around for sure. They're an awesome game fish.
Okay. So when it comes to lake fishing, are you using different techniques for the different trout, or is it kind of a one fly fits all?
No, it's kind of a one technique, and some days one fly fits all, but you don't use different techniques for different fish. No, there you kind of find them, and then you kind of see what you get using the proper techniques and the proper flies.
And are we talking streamers, nymphs, dry flies? What are we talking about on this lake?
Pretty much. We're still water midging with big chronomid patterns, and then a lot of streamer fishing. When there's a perch population in there, when the perch hatch and become about 2 inches long, we start stripping perch fry, little matukas and different patterns that we make here at the shop for them. So yeah, a mixture of nymphs and streamers.
Okay, so you offer stream fishing too, and that would be on the Owens River. There's the Lower Owens and the Upper Owens. Tell our listeners a little bit about this experience.
Well, I mean, there's two completely different rivers. We have the Lower Owens, which basically comes out of Crawley into another reservoir, Pleasant Valley, and then comes out the bottom of that dam and makes the Lower Owens River. And that's a desert fishery, very rich water, big trout population per mile, lots of dry fly fishing, all wild fish, wild brown trout and wild rainbows. It's a spectacular fishy. Pretty easy wading. Sometimes we're guiding, we're fishing dry flies all day long. On the other hand, the Upper Owens is about 4,000 feet in elevation above it, and it's what feeds Crawley Lake. And in the wintertime, in late fall and early spring, the big fish that we were just talking about on Crawley actually head up the Upper Owens. And if there's enough snow, we take snowmobiles in there after them. We get in there any way we can to catch these basically world-class fish that are up out of the lake to spawn and eat each other's spawn and to eat the food that the river offers in the winter.
One other thing you offer is horseback trips into, I'm assuming, lakes and streams for trout. I'm guessing this is right into the mountains of the Sierra Nevadas?
Exactly, right above Bishop here, right out of South Lake and North Lake. There's hundreds of lakes to choose from depending on the weather and the year and the snow runoff. You know, each lake's different, so we go up there at the beginning of the year, figure out what we're going to take people, and then have people contact us, and they kind of tell us what we want, and we kind of tailor our trip. We can do lakes one day, streams another day. We actually have some water strider boats that inflatable boats that we pack up there, which gives us a huge advantage over most fishing up there. So, yeah, that's what we do up there. We have a lot of fun up there doing that.
One last question. If we're talking pack-in trips to the Sierra Nevadas, are golden trout an option with you?
They are, yeah. Yeah, we have to go in a little further, but they're definitely an option. And, of course, it's hard to find the pure ones, but we have a couple streams where they're real close to 100% pure.
I'm guessing a lot of these areas you just told us about, private access, you've got to get in with the guide. Is that correct?
Well, a lot of them, yes. But some of them, no, you can access to the public. Probably half and half, honestly.
All right. Well, the place to find out more is the Sierra Trout Magnet Fly Shop. It's located on North Sierra Highway in Bishop, California. If you're in the area, stop by or go to their website. It's sierratroutmagnet.com. That's sierratroutmagnet.com. Ask them about where to fish, or better still, book a trip. Sounds like you're going to have a great time, especially this fall. David, thanks for sharing this with us on America Outdoors Radio.
Awesome. Thank you, John.
I'll tell you what, after talking with David, I want to go fishing in the Sierra Nevadas. Unfortunately, we have got to go. But if you get a chance, go to our website. It's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. You'll find podcasts of recent shows, or at least segments from recent shows there. You'll also find a preview of what's coming up in the week ahead. And don't forget to like our Facebook page. You'll find that at America Outdoors Radio. You'll find that we put stuff there, information, news, and more that doesn't necessarily make it on the air. Unfortunately, we can only cover so much in an hour. So go to our Facebook page at America Outdoors Radio to stay in the loop during the rest of the week as to what's going on in the outdoors. If you want to hear us online, a couple ways to do that. One of them is on WRVO Radio. It is an internet station that's dedicated to outdoors programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That website, renoviolaoutdoors.com. You can also hear us through podbean.com. As a matter of fact, if you go there to this podcast site, subscribe to America Outdoors Radio on Podbean, and don't forget to download the app. That Podbean app allows you to hear us whether you are tuning in through your iPhone or through your Android device. That's podbean.com to get started. As we wind things up, we again share our prayers this week. They continue to go out to the residents of Southeast Texas and Louisiana affected by the rains and the floods brought on by Hurricane Harvey and its aftermath. And if you want to help, and I know a lot of you do, consider a cash donation to a relief organization. One I've donated to is the American Red Cross. Again, I worked with them in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. They do a great job helping folks affected by natural disasters just like these. And if you want to donate, just go to their website. You'll find it at redcross.org. That's redcross.org. And you'll find a donate tab right there on the front page where you can donate cash to the victims that need your help in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. Here's hoping you are blessed in the week ahead and that you get outside as well for some fishing, hunting, and late summer fun. I hope you have a happy Labor Day weekend, and remember, it's your country and your outdoors.